Coming up at 7 o'clock, the League of Women Voters presents Second Congressional District live debate moderated by Dominican University of California President Mary B. Marcy. Right here, worldwide, on radio.dominican.edu.
Good evening, and welcome to this evening's debate for the 2nd Congressional District, newly redrawn 2nd Congressional District of California. This debate is co-sponsored by Dominican's Department of Political Science and International Studies and the League of Women Voters of Marin County. My name is Mary Marcy, and it is my pleasure to serve not only as president of Dominican University of California, but as a professor of political science at Dominican and as a moderator for this evening's debate. It is also my pleasure and my privilege to thank the candidates for being here this evening. Franklin Roosevelt once said that there is no greater calling than public service. I think he was right, but I think sometimes we forget that, and it takes a great deal of courage to run for Congress. So please join me in thanking our candidates for being here. Now, I mentioned that the district is newly redrawn, but we are a district and we are a community. And as many of you know, I'm sure as all of you know, this is a community that suffered a great loss in the last few days with the tragedy in the boat race. It's a loss that hits particularly close to home in this county and actually at Dominican. A Dominican student, Jordan Fromm, was due to graduate next month with a degree in business administration, and he was among the victims. Partly in honor of Jordan, partly in recognition of how we're all suffering at this particular period of time, we'd like to start the evening with a brief moment of silence. Thank you, and thank you to the candidates for supporting and acknowledging the importance of that. Now, this evening's debate will be unusual in a few ways. I want to outline the details and the format for you. It's unusual in that with 12 candidates, we don't have a classic debate where they have a chance to talk back and forth directly to each other, but we want to make sure that everyone has a chance to articulate their ideas and their interests. The best way that we could think of to do that at Dominican was to ask our students in political science classes to come up with the questions, and they have. So they are student questions, which means they are intelligent, they are focused, they're thoughtful, and they're challenging, as you will find. This debate is being filmed by students as well in our Department of Communications in association with the Community Media Center of Marin. And it's being broadcast live on Marin Cable 27, which will be available for later viewing. The 12 candidates here with us are running in the June 5th primary for the newly redrawn 2nd Congressional District. I'll start by introducing them, talk briefly about the format, and we'll hear from the candidates, which is what we most want to do this evening. So please join me in welcoming our candidates in alphabetical order. Starting on my right, Susan Adams. Andy Caffrey. Brooke Clark. William Courtney. Larry Fritzlin. Mike Hollywell. Jared Huffman. Stacy Lawson, John Llewellyn, Tiffany Renee, Dan Roberts, and Norman Solomon. Now for the format, and part of this involves the audience, so listen up. The candidates will have 1 minute for answers. We'll begin in alphabetical order and alternate for each question. At the end of the questions, the candidates will each have 1 minute for closing remarks, and we'll do that in reverse alphabetical order. So there'll be no opening statement, but there will be a closing statement. Now for the important bit from the audience. In an effort to be fair, in an interest of time, and in the interest of not looking too much like cable news, we are going to ask you to hold your applause until the end of the debate, when applause will be entirely appropriate and welcome. So let's begin with the questions. And as I said, we will start in alphabetical order. She's been, I think, fully warned and accustomed to it because of her surname. We'll start with Susan Adams. But all of the candidates will answer this question. And the question is, if elected, what three bills would you introduce during your first term, and why?
One minute for this answer. First, I want to thank you all for having us here, the Dirty Dozen. We're like the traveling family circus. But the Health Care Reform Act needs to be solidified and make progress forward toward Medicare for all. We need to get our men and women out of the Middle East in war, and we need to pass a Jobs Act. And I think President Obama's Jobs Act gives us a good start in replacing our infrastructure, investing in education, and in also helping us to find the resources that we need to get this country back on track. And as a women's health nurse practitioner, a professor of nursing who's taught at this campus, a mother and a grandmother, I care very deeply about what happens in the community. I've served in public office for 10 years, bringing some really innovative policy forward. I know how to fight the tough fight. Many of you have watched me in action. Today we had a great board meeting talking about a very difficult issue.
Thank you. Three bills in 60 seconds. Andy Caffrey.
Hi. Thanks for coming and thanks for hosting this. Well, my campaign is built around seven proposals called New Green America, and they'll be integrated into these bills. The first is that the climate crisis is national security threat number one, and it requires us to get off fossil fuels and nuclear as fast as possible. And the way to do that is essentially to reduce the distance things have to go. So we have to rebuild our infrastructure locally to meet all of our needs as close to home as possible. And so what we need is something akin to the World War II effort, our response to Hitler and to the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And we need to convert. We need a couple of trillion dollars there. So my program will take that money from retreating the American empire, pulling back bases from the 150 countries or so where we're installed, from ending the war on drugs, and from taxing the rich. Also legalizing pot, prosecuting the Bush administration, and electoral reform round out the seven. The other two bills, so I'd introduce a conversion bill, a marijuana legalization bill, and my first bill is a ban on using riot suppression techniques on nonviolent protesters.
Brooke Clark, first three bills in your first term in Congress.
I'm not going to answer it directly because these guys are all going to tell you the same answers to these questions. So I'd like to do a little Burma Shave thing here and talk about something different. I know you don't like politicians to do that, but I think that's the only way I can get some points made. I believe that the Democrats and the Republicans are the same party functionally. That means that for things like war, the economy, health care, and justice, a Democrat and a Republican are going to vote the same way. This was brought home really heavy to me with the Bush 43 administration when I voted for the other party and we got Obama and he's Bush 44. He's done more bad things, you know, than continuing the Bush 43 line. So they say insanity is doing something over and over again and expecting to see a change. And I was insane for three or four decades. I think some of the students here weren't even born when I started being insane. Now I realize that the only way to get a change is not vote for a Democrat and not vote for a Republican.
Thank you. William Courtney, three bills in your first term in 60 seconds.
Thank you. Thanks for organizing and putting this on. I know there are incredible work and cost. First bill would be to address the tyranny of terrorism. We had 76 progressive Democrats vote to support the anti-protest bill, striking willful from the terminology of previous protest bills. We have the National Defense Authorization Act allowing detention. We have offshore torture facilities. These are issues that are stripping our civil rights and we need to address quickly and seriously. Term limits, the corporate politician does not really represent the people that he's there to represent. And term limits will bring in new ideas and prevent that the kind of problems that you see when you have precipice politics, which have dominated in the last Congress. And last of all, clean energy, which is also an essential way to protect the environment. We need to remove the control from the oil industry, and that's obviously would require a constitutional amendment since they run Congress.
Thank you. Larry Fritzlin.
It's an amazing fact that 90% of us don't trust the politicians in Washington. I think that the root cause of that is the massive amount of money that is flowing around and the corruption that it leads to. So one of the first things I would do is replace the Electoral College with a popular vote, allow campaign contributions from individuals only through a constitutional amendment, and then lead to publicly funded elections. Number two, the environment. We're all worried about our biosphere. I would propose a constitutional amendment that says Congress and the executive branch and all their actions will strive to recreate a biosphere like the one existed when this country was founded. And the third thing is end the drug war, which is creating addiction in this country, costing us billions of dollars and creating half the prisons we have, and it's taking countries down around the world down. I would propose three things. One is end drug use in all children. That's where addiction starts. Two, legalize all drugs and use the funds from that only for three things: funding education, prevention, and the treatment of all addicts.
Thank you. Mike Hollywell.
I would start by repealing and replacing Obamacare with health care reform based on positive incentives, not coercion. I would equalize the subsidies across the income spectrum so that those at the bottom would not have to pay more than 10% of their income towards health care, and those at the top would not get more than the same average tax benefit of those in the middle. I would allow purchase across state lines so people could buy what they needed. I would end the discrimination against young people, charging them three times as much as their risk. That way you would eliminate most of the pre-existing condition problems because most people develop those in middle age. I would also try to close tax loopholes such as the ethanol subsidy, which I would use to repeal the 4.3 cent added gas tax that Lynn Woolsey helped to ram through in 93. I would cut back on this so-called carried interest for hedge fund money managers and charge them 20% instead of 15% for the first quarter of a million and 25% above that. And I would use that to help shore up Social Security. And finally, I would try to make gerrymandering illegal.
Thank you. And now we will switch to the other side of the podium and start on this side with Jared Huffman.
Thank you. I would like to see a second stimulus package, and I'd like to see it focused on two of the most important things that we can do to address long-term unemployment and low consumer confidence that's holding back our recovery. And those are focusing on critical infrastructure. By that, I include not only transportation, but also things like rural broadband, clean energy transmission, and any number of other things. Second, mortgage debt relief. Critical to increasing and addressing the consumer confidence problem we have. Second, I'd like to see, finally, federal funding for the special education mandate under IDEA. As an active San Rafael Schools parent and community member, I know what a difference that would make to our schools here in Marin and around the state. And then finally, I would like to introduce clean energy legislation patterned on many of the successful policies that I've had a chance to be part of as a California legislator, including getting the FHFA out of the way on property-assessed clean energy, these voluntary assessments that can result in tremendous job creation as well as energy reduction.
Thank you. Stacey Lawson.
So I want to thank the League of Women Voters and Dominican for letting us be here. The first three bills I'd want to introduce are, one, a comprehensive jobs bill. This campaign has been about fighting for our working and middle-class families, making sure that we're restoring our economy, closing the structural gaps that we have in jobs in this country, and making sure that everyone has a path to a secure retirement, the ability to put their kids through college. So we need to be creating a small business landscape that's thriving, opening up flows of capital. It's why we've put together our plan, Making More in America. I would encourage you all to take a look at it on our website. The second would be around clean energy. And we need to actually be making more of this vital raw material that fuels our entire economy, and doing that in clean and sustainable ways. So upgrading our electric grid to be a smart electric grid, making sure we're funding basic R&D and moving to renewable and alternative energy sources. And third, I would look at education reform, making sure that we're fixing broken, flawed policies like No Child Left Behind, making sure that our kids have affordable, high-quality public education, and that they have a way to go to college without incurring debt so that they can be productive members of our workforce and everyone can thrive.
Thank you. John Llewellyn.
Good evening. I'm an independent 69-year-old citizen, and I'm drawn into this campaign to ask you to help me to make some fundamental reforms. I'm afraid we're headed toward war and depression the way we're going. I would like to write some large bills that would set a whole new course for this country. Bills that might not be passed right away, but would set the course. I would write a National Peace Conversion Act to convert our industrial base from military production into a massive jobs program to rebuild the infrastructure and for energy conversion. I would also write a National Energy Conversion Act so that we can move away from carbon-producing fossil fuels toward wind and solar so that we can save the environment and stop the global warming. And finally, I would introduce and push forward, and I really need your help on this, a single-payer health plan. This system we have right now is a sadistic system, and we've got to do something better.
Thank you. Tiffany Renee.
Thank you. As a local elected representative, as Petaluma Vice Mayor, I have seen the great challenges around our economy, and we need to stop the bleeding. And so the focus that I would take would be to address Medicare for All, starting with public employees throughout the United States. That will bring the funding that we're currently spending on ever-rising healthcare costs back home to allow our cities and counties to put that money to good use back in public services. Second, I would address student loan refinancing. We have historically low rates, and those rates should be available to student loan holders as well. We need to address forgiveness of student loans. We must address foreclosure prevention, and having been working with the Occupy movement and not seeing much traction around moratoriums, we have to address a moratorium, as well as returning to the rule of law, reenacting Glass-Steagall, and reducing principals on our mortgages. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Roberts.
Yes, thank you, and thank you for having us here tonight. The three bills that I would introduce, recognizing first that we are in a financial crisis, and it spills over into the jobs and the economic broad-based crisis that we have. So my first, addressing these issues, it's all on my website. The first issue would be a balanced budget amendment. I think we have to cut the federal spending to a more reasonable level towards a balanced budget. The administration's budget never balances, and Ryan's budget balances in 30 years. Well, that's not enough. I think we need to bring it in balance sooner. The second part would be a bill to reduce taxes on businesses and individuals. Businesses are not competitive given today's tax rates. And individuals, we should cut the brackets, cut the level, and broaden the base so everybody has an oar in the water. The third thing is, the only veteran who is on campaigning now, and a combat veteran from Vietnam, I recognize the true cost of war. So our third bill would be to bring the troops home.
Thank you. And Norman Solomon.
I'm not a politician, and yet I have working relationships with many progressive leaders in Congress. That's why Raul Grijalva, co-chair of the Progressive Caucus, has endorsed me in this race. Co-sponsoring the single-payer health care bill is essential, and promoting it so we have enhanced Medicare for all. John Conyers, who is supporting me again in this race, is the prime sponsor. I've worked with him. I want to get single-payer guaranteed health care for all in this country. Also, we need legislation for a Green New Deal, and we need to help children in the process. The Green New Deal legislation can invest, as happened during the New Deal, from the federal government to create jobs throughout our communities, now with sustainable energy options that we know about, the imperative to roll back climate change. A Green New Deal is essential. And finally, legislation to reprioritize our priorities and how the money's spent. Significant long-term and immediate cuts in military spending, and using the savings from that spending to go ahead and fund education, healthcare, housing, to help our communities in this district and around the country.
Thank you. And thank you all for rotating through and getting some key points across in a brief period of time. The second question will actually just come down the row. So Andy, you'll take the lead. You'll bat lead on the next question. And the next question is definitely from a student. The student says, I will be graduating soon. Like many of my classmates, I am concerned about the economy. What can Congress realistically do to help the economy and create jobs?
Congress can't do anything to tweak this economy. This economy is collapsing. It's not only collapsing economically, it's reaching the ecological limits. So what we have to do is recognize that, and we have to start creating an alternative economy. That's why what we have to do is essentially build Ecotopia now, because we're not going to be able to keep our jobs based on globalization. We have to make sure that we're taking care of our economic security here, just like we take care of our food security, our water security, and our ecological security. Let's see. So what's happened is, since 1979, back then, the top 1% had 8% of the wealth. In 2007, they had 23%. If you picture a graph where the rich are over here and the rest of us are here, it's essentially drained, emptied the shower, the bathtub, and the money has drained out of the middle class, and that's why the economy has slowed down. So what they're doing now is they're trying to do more of the same. They're literally bringing down the economy with these tax cuts. So what we have to do is redirect money from the war on drugs, from the empire, and from the rich, and put it into new infrastructure here to build a local, sustainable economy.
Thank you. Brooke Clark, what can Congress realistically do to help the economy?
Economics is a way you allocate resources, and people at different times have come up with different ideas. I think Adam Smith wrote Wealth of Nations way before the Industrial Revolution started. It's been over 200 years ago. There was no electricity then, okay? The highest tech business was making cast iron frying pans. So I call it capitalism 1.0, which is what people are using right now, is obsolete. There's a better way. I call it capitalism 2.0. And you can see a really good example of this in the movie A Beautiful Mind, which is about the Nobel Prize winner John Nash. He's a mathematician, but he won the prize in economics. And there's a bar scene in there with a bunch of guys sitting around and some beautiful women come in. And he said, if we all fight, do what's best for us individually, then we're all going to lose. But if we do what's best for the group and for ourselves individually, then we're all going to get laid.
Thank you. And the stop sign came out just then. William Courtney?
With over $15 trillion in debt, we have to really look at our children's future, which we pretty much have spent. It's just an absolute devastation in terms of the burden that they're going to have to move carrying forward. We need to stop the deficit spending, and that's going to be a very difficult thing. As we go into the sequester this year and we try to remove $600 billion from the military budget and $600 from the domestic, it's going to be a real free-for-all in Washington that will show you the true colors of the place. The bailouts that we did in 2008 of the American Insurance Group and the banks and their fractional banking system that kind of put us in this status needs to be changed. Transactions on Wall Street need to be taxed so we can generate some funds. We need to stop policing the world and share that with other members of the world so that we can focus on the domestic. But just the $600 billion that's going to be cut is going to be so difficult that there really is not going to be any easy or low-hanging fruit to kind of supply jobs.
Thank you. Larry Fritzlin.
Well, I think this is pretty simple. Vote for me and people like me that are going to go back and not take money. That's my pledge, not to take money from any source except individuals and then only $100. Right now, Congress is bought off. It is corrupt. It's not working. And I think the money is there. We give $28 billion to the oil companies. Huh? We give $14 billion to six multinational food corporations, military-industrial complex, and all of these companies kick money back to Congress to keep the game going. It is very, very straightforward. General Electric made $4.6 billion last year and didn't pay a penny in taxes. Why? Because General Electric gave millions of dollars to politicians, the Congress people back there. They took the money and voted for what? GE not getting taxes. So basically, Congress right now is bought off, it's corrupt, and it's funneling money from us, the taxpayers, to the 1%. So to me, it's really simple. We're enabling this. We, the voter, are enabling this mess. Thank you.
Mike Hollowell.
A young person entering the workforce needs to be concerned about long-term job creation, not short-term expediency, which is what the politicians in Washington are doing with their various stimulus packages, payroll, tax holidays, and quantitative easing. This quantitative easing is a euphemism for cranking up the printing press and printing money so we can buy our own bonds with the money we've just printed. If we lose our position as international reserve currency, God help us. We're using 25% of the world's oil as it is, and if people don't accept dollars in payment for that oil, our economy is going to collapse. We simply have to stop thinking in the short term and start paying the bills. It's going to result in a slower recovery, but we're sick and tired of these recoveries that arrive a month before the election, followed by a hangover immediately after the election. We've got to start paying our way and not be the first generation that kicks the can down the road so our grandchildren curse our name when they think of us.
And next, Jared Huffman.
Thank you. I mentioned earlier the importance of investing in critical infrastructure and also mortgage debt relief to end this mortgage foreclosure crisis. Two critically important things that are holding back our economy, long-term unemployment and consumer confidence, two fixes that we can get moving on right now. Looking further ahead, education is going to be critical to rebuilding the most productive workforce in the world, and we got to get started on that now. The same for our clean energy economy. That can get moving now. We've shown many great examples here in California. The last thing I'll mention is we need to avoid the false choice of economy and the environment. We can have both if we pursue creative models. I'm doing that right now as your state legislator. I'm authoring a bill, the Clean Manufacturing and Job Creation Incentive Act, bipartisan support, passed out of committee today, to do pre-permitting without relaxing any environmental standards so that we can eliminate the delay and uncertainty in our regulatory process while maintaining our high environmental standards. It's going to be a terrific way to attract quality jobs and keep them here in California.
Thank you. Stacey Lawson.
As someone who's spent the last 20 years or so in economic development in the private sector, as well as teaching entrepreneurship and small business at UC Berkeley, I think there are actually three key areas we need to look at in terms of helping the economy. One is demand stimulus, second is structural reform, and the third is making more in America. And I'll start with the third. I think we actually need a coherent industrial policy, which we don't have today, that will stimulate things like insourcing, bringing back manufacturing to our shores, and stewarding local niche manufacturing, local sustainable food production, local agriculture, and making a small business landscape that can thrive. In terms of structural reform, you've heard some of the things here. We need to address our fragile banking system, reinstate Glass-Steagall, take care of the mortgage overhang, and make sure that we have tax reform that is putting tax fairness and proper revenue in streams into our budget. And then in terms of demand stimulus, we need to continue to invest in infrastructure, both digital and physical, to make sure that we're putting folks to work right away and that as a 70% consumer economy, folks have extra dollars in their pockets to spend.
Thank you. John Llewellyn.
Yes. Well, I'm afraid realistically, Congress can't do anything to turn around our huge problems without a mass movement of the citizens. So I'm asking everybody to get into the Occupy movement, get into citizen movements. And I think that one thing that is just going to bring us down if we don't control it is the uncontrolled expansion of the U.S. military and its creation of wars around the world. Wars in Afghanistan, wars in different nations. I think that we have to use the power of the purse in Congress to stop this gigantic military expansion and put the money into education and the things that my colleagues have been talking about here. But we can't turn away from this because it's an uncontrolled growth of militarism, and particularly in missile defense and space war, which I've studied, this is leading us toward not only a draining of all of our resources, but to a global world war.
Tiffany Renee, what can Congress do to help the economy?
The first thing that we need to address is corporate control of our Congress and our state legislatures. The California state legislature has not been able to address our foreclosure crisis. Several of the homeowners' rights bills are dying in committee. We have to end corporate personhood and enact public financing of our federal and state elections if we're going to see real change. And we have to address the money that's flowing in from Wall Street. If we tax Wall Street, we'll be able to bring more money back into our budgets and protect our quality of life back at home. If we can do that, we will be able to focus on renewable energy projects like what I've done in Petaluma, in working around the Sonoma Clean Power, something I've been working on since before I was elected to City Council. We are focusing on bringing renewable energy projects in the $200 to $300 million range to create jobs and improve our quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Roberts?
Yes, in terms of jobs and economic recovery, this is my main campaign issue. It's a fiscal issue. And two things I'll say right now. The so-called progressives, liberals are, in this county, multi-counties, there's two things they can't do. They can't spend their way out of this crisis, and they can't borrow their way out of this crisis. Spending aggravates the problem. You can see with the Fed at a zero rate environment, they're trying to get more people to borrow. Well, borrowing got us into this problem. So those are the two things you cannot do. On the other hand, what we can do is in creating jobs is, again, lower the tax rate, broaden the base, and also smart regulation. I'm involved with FINRA, with the SEC. I'm a national committee dealing with trying to improve regulation for my kind of small business. And so we need smart regulation. If you know anything about California especially and the federal government, much of there's a great overreach, and it's done by unpaid bureaucrats.
Thank you. Norman Solomon.
Well, I have a very different perspective. The way we got the New Deal, the way we can do the public investment to help children, the elderly, education, the environment, is public investment. We can only do that if we have a political environment that challenges Wall Street and has civic engagement. Too many people who are elected and running for office in the process are getting big money from the very wealthy, and that's how Wall Street continues to make out like bandits. Now, we've been campaigning, 6, 8, 9 months. We've had many debates, but now the revelations this weekend that, Stacey, you didn't vote 2/3 out of a dozen key elections where human rights and economic issues were involved. You also are bringing massive amounts of money from your corporate friends into this race. If we're going to have a healthy economy, we're going to have a political process where the vote is valued, where we don't have big money calling the tune in the elections. We need grassroots campaigns that are healthy. I'm very proud that our campaign does not take corporate PAC money, does not take lobbyist money, and we've raised from 5,100 different individuals more than $500,000.
And I will turn to Susan Adams and ask her to complete the round of questions.
Thank you. I think we need to ask ourselves where our values are and where we want to invest our resources. Our values are reflected by how we do this, and I'm proud of the way our county as a local government has balanced our budget, and we helped to launch the Marin Clean Energy Program, which has been generating clean jobs. My public record is very clear, from voting in the elections to 10 years of my votes on the Board of Supervisors, which is very public. We've had opportunities to hear each other make presentations, and Ms. Lawson has repeatedly talked about 20 years of being in economic policy. But the claims of her business experience don't actually come true. Just 2 years ago, she was executive chairman of the Chelsea Henry, which failed to pay investors and creditors millions of dollars before it went under, and failed to pay payroll taxes for 15 quarters while Ms. Lawson was chair. I think that raises the question about, is this the kind of economic policy we need?
Right, the third question is, I think, clearly from a student who's still looking for his or her candidate. It'll give you all a chance to define your candidacies a bit more clearly. The question is, there are 12 candidates running in this primary election. How do you stand out in this crowded field? What separates you from the other candidates? And we'll continue to move down the line, so Brooke Clark, please lead us off with this question.
Yeah, I like that question. My education has been in engineering. Designed a lot of products. I currently have a little web page where I manufacture products and sell them on the internet. So I'm used to doing research and homework. I think a lot of the answers you've heard here already, people are looking at the problems as if they were weather. Like, it's 2007 and the forecast for 2008 sunny. It's 2008, hail's coming down, there's trillions of dollars of damage, and it's cloudy. Forecast today is it's still raining. You know, like it's random stuff happening. It isn't. The things that are happening are because of laws that have already been passed. That means that if you're looking forward and you don't know what your history is, you're in big trouble. And one example of this is the justice system. I think the students here all weren't even born in the 1980s, 1990s, when there was a big crime wave. And we passed three strikes, you're out, mandatory. That's enough. I'll get back.
We'll get back to it. Thank you. William Courtney.
I have extensive history in the area of invention, a dozen patents. I'm a problem solver. My daughter flunked her life jacket test. I became a member of the Standards and Technical Panel, created the current test that the U.S. Coast Guard, and the only jacket that passes that. My friend asked if I would approve of cannabis. I refused. 5 years later, I'm an international expert on non-psychoactive dietary cannabis. Cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and Alzheimer's equals the military budget. That's $600 billion. Cannabis has the ability to reduce heart attacks by 66%, insulin-dependent diabetes by 58%. This is a district strength that we have, and there's no reason that we don't take that forward and look at pulling some of that money and allowing the prevention of illness rather than waiting until individuals are so sick that the society has to bear that cost. So I have a lot of experience in a lot of different areas, but problem solving is my major one.
Thank you. Larry Frislin, what separates you from the other candidates?
I like it when the students come up with the questions. You guys do good. This is fun. I think that I'm the only one up here. I'm a Democrat. And I'm saying that the members of my party that are in Washington are corrupt. I'm the only Democrat up here that's saying that, which sort of makes me wonder. You know, I see that, I wrote a book called Intervention on America, that the politicians and the 1% are the addicts, and they act like it, and we're the enablers and the codependents. And I once asked Norman Solomon where he would take money, and like a politician, he rambled on for 2-3 minutes, and I took the microphone back and said, maybe I wasn't clear, where will you take the money? And he rambled on for another 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, and he never really answered the question. And part of that is that he, like a lot of the Democrats, is taking money from the unions, who are buying off the Democrats to run fracking, drilling, and the Keystone Pipeline. And Jared Huffman, who is ostensibly the leader so far, I have to wonder about a politician that doesn't say there is corruption everywhere and my party's part of it.
Mike Hollowell.
Can I start now?
You can start now. Yeah.
What sets me aside is my long political track record, because back in 1970, I was a Reform Coalition candidate along with Peter Baer of Marin County, running on political reform and a strong conservation record. I've always been protective of the environment, against offshore oil drilling, also against nuclear power, which has impossible to recycle toxic waste, also against the clear cutting that Pacific Lumber did to destroy the redwood industry in the North Coast part of this district. You don't want a huge number of logs on the market all of a sudden and then nothing left now. I fight political gerrymandering. We finally won the fight here and we have decent districts here. I've been fighting that for 20 years. And finally, I have my own health care plan. My helping my wife fight breast cancer is my motivation, but individual choice is the key thing, not single payer where he who pays the piper calls the tune.
Thank you. Jared Huffman, what separates you from the other candidates?
Thank you. Well, I'm different in the sense that I'm running on a platform of legislative accomplishment. I'm the only one that's done the job of being a legislator. And in a tough, polarized environment, I've been able to overcome that and get things done, passing over 60 pieces of successful legislation, including lots of big bills that are making a difference. In tough times, I've been able to get things done for this district, like stopping the terrible death row expansion at San Quentin and saving the state $1.6 billion that should be spent on schools, not death row, like working to save our state parks and many, many other examples. The other thing that I think sets me apart is that I have an authentic and long-standing connection to this district. I don't think you can represent a place well if you don't love it, and I don't think you can love it if you don't know it. I've been here for over 20 years. I'm raising my kids here in the public schools. My wife is a teacher. I have been for two decades involved in boards and commissions and nonprofits of every type. I love this place, and it's a big part of why I want to represent you in Congress.
Thank you. Stacey Lawson.
Thank you. So I think what's unique about our campaign is this notion of fighting for working and middle-class families, having been in economic development for 20 years, and having the experience with our economy, how to get our economy going again, how to make sure we're creating the kinds of high-wage, middle-class jobs that are going to take care of our families. It's really, really near and dear to my heart. And I do want to address the concern over voting record. I appreciate and understand that concern, and I think it was definitely a mistake not to vote consistently. That there was a time in my life where I felt that my energies and efforts were better served directly, creating education programs for our kids, serving in our local communities, making sure that we're addressing poverty alleviation and helping families in need. But you can do those things and vote too. And I was disenfranchised thinking that the political sphere wasn't the answer, and clearly I'm remedying my ways here. I think we need government, engaged government, and engaged citizens. And I do hope that folks will understand that I'm running because I genuinely care. I want to bring the experience I have to bear to serve our communities and our economy, and I hope that folks will take into account that entire record of service. Thank you.
Thank you. John Noel.
Well, to put it lightly, I think that I'm the candidate for the hopeless because I'm the most hopeless candidate. that's probably it. I've got less than $10,000 in the campaign account. But if you elect me, it will shake politics worldwide because it will say to big money politics, forget it. We can elect a person who's lived here for 35 years, who makes his living as a wild seaweed harvester, who's devoted to fundamental reforms, to really turning around the military and reforming the financial system, and who really isn't interested in spending the 2 or 3 hours a day that Congress people usually use collecting money. Also, I'd like to say I'm part of the nonviolence movement. I'm a nonviolent candidate, and I regret that people are going through each other's records and stuff, and I hope they don't look at mine too closely either.
Thank you. Tiffany Renee, what separates you from the other candidates?
Thank you. I was the first Latina elected to the Petaluma City Council, and with that I brought over 20 plus years experience working in my community around the issues of domestic violence awareness, protecting the environment, and electing pro-choice women to office, as well as mentoring and appointing women as well. I consciously chose last year in this process when I was being told by consultants to spend 30 to 40 hours a week dialing for dollars that I would right-size my campaign and focus and continue my focus in meeting the needs of my region and instead of spending that time dialing for dollars. And I've continued to do that, and I will continue to do that in Washington, D.C. I know this area very well, and I know how to meet the needs of my district, and I want to continue to do that in Congress. So I have that experience, and I don't have the baggage, and that's what we need in a representative.
Thank you. Dan Roberts?
Yes, thank you very much, and I'd love to have your vote. And the reason I'm running is because I looked at our country years ago and said we're facing a crisis, a coming crisis, and I thought I had skills that would address themselves at the congressional level. For example, as the only veteran, a combat veteran, we're in a war for over 10 years in Afghanistan, and so I'm worried about that. I want the troops to come home. But also, I know that the full cost of troops going back from combat sometimes not quite whole, so I want to make sure we keep the promise to them. I started my own business. I've been doing it for 25 years. I have hands-on experience creating jobs and creating wealth and helping individuals throughout the Bay Area. And finally, I've been actively working through FINRA with the SEC, working on the Dodd-Frank Act. So if we talk about federal experience, I have 5 years of working on that to make it smart regulation out of what was a congressional mandate. Thank you.
Thank you. Norman Solomon?
Well, I and our campaign have a blend of feet on the ground and eyes on our ideals. That's why we have more than 1,000 volunteers. That's why we have so many individual contributors. We're doing things differently. Also, I'm the only candidate with any significant foreign policy experience. I've been working on international affairs for several decades. I've looked into the eyes of children in Baghdad and Afghanistan before war and during war. I understand at a visceral as well as intellectual level that the decisions made in Washington are matters of life and death for Americans who are sent to kill and be killed and for the people in those countries. Since 1966, when at age 14 I picketed for civil rights, I've been engaged in this process. For me, it's not an abstraction. I'm not making a career move here. This is sort of the culmination, in a sense, being age 60, of the work I've done in these decades. And I think that we have an opportunity to represent this progressive district with someone who will speak truth to and about power.
Thank you. And back to the other side of the podium, Susan Adams.
Thank you. Well, I'm saying send a nurse to Washington to heal the house, because they could use a little help there right now. And Jared's not the only one with legislative experience. I've served for 10 years at local government, bringing some very innovative programs over the finish line, including the Marin Energy Authority, a comprehensive health and wellness campus, non-motorized bike and pedestrian pathways, and that has come in no small part from my ability to be able to access the federal dollars that are in the regulatory agencies. I'd like you to check my website, which is SusanAdamsForCongress.com, where I've launched my Adams agenda. There's a lot of information there. But with 33 years as a nurse, being a women's health nurse practitioner, a professor of nursing, a mother and a grandmother, I'm the most qualified here to deal with the health care reform issues and the assault on women's reproductive rights. I've raised my kids here as a single mom 25 years in Marin, working hard and putting myself through a PhD program. I also am a fourth generational descendant of a Mendocino ranching family with deep roots in this community.
Thank you. And to complete this question, Andy will ask you to summarize your reasons for being separate from this field and what makes you stand out.
Would you please raise your hand if you're freaked out about the climate crisis, the ecological meltdown, the collapse of the economy, or the destruction of our government? Okay. Well, I'm the only one here who's running as if those things are real, as if we have to tackle them at a fundamental level. In fact, I would suggest to you that there's a new kind of climate crisis denier. I, by the way, was the person who coined that meme, climate crisis, and I've been working on it for 30 years. And this climate denier is a green climate denier. They don't deny that there's a climate crisis, but they don't change how they live, and they don't change their politics at all. We've run out of time. We had 30 years to deal with this, and we did nothing. So we have to go in there, and I'm a person who's worked as an organizer for 30 years, and I've been involved. I founded two green parties for 30 years, the Citizens Party and the Greens Party. I've been an Earth First organizer, worked on the forest issues up here for over 25 years. I'm considered a world historic figure by the BBC for the world's first anti-genetic engineering grassroots organizer, and they call me the world's first crop puller because we also were the first people to sabotage a genetic engineering test site. So I'm going in there to fight these people.
Thank you. You get the feeling 60 seconds, some people are just starting down the runway, and you guys are doing a great job, so thank you for working with us on the time. So the next question is definitely from a student who does something we focus on at Dominican, a close reading of text. So I will make it brief, but it's a thoughtful question from a political scientist. Congress, and in particular the House of Representatives, has been described recently by academics, journalists, current and former members, as an institution that is mired in toxic partisan gridlock. What steps would you take as a freshman member of the House to restore the value of compromise and focus on governing and not simply on campaigning? So that question, we will start with William Courtney.
Thank you. Term limits are essential. And until the Constitution calls for a two-year term. We have congressmen that are there for 48 years. There's a disconnect between the intent of this position and what people are seeking. They're seeking to, it takes them 30 years to decide that insider trading applies to them. It's been a law, people are in prison for 30 years and they go, well, that applies to us too. If you're gonna raise $500,000 a year, eventually someone relieves you of that burden and you become a lobbyist, you become a corporate person. So it's essential that we allow people to go there with fresh ideas, exchange, contribute those, and allow other people to come in place. And that is probably the only thing that's going to kind of bust up this precipice politics that we have, where you have Rayathon representative as opposed to the teachers union, and the two of them are toe-to-toe, and they've got their positions, and they will not cross the line. We saw that with the debt ceiling. We're going to see it this year in spades. As a psychiatrist, that's psychopathy.
Thank you. Larry Fritzlin.
You probably can tell I don't have a lot of hope. I got tired of apologizing to my grandkids about the state of the planet and democracy, and that's why I'm here. The politicians are bought off. They go back there and average $10,000 to $15,000 a day, taking from the industries they're supposed to regulate or legislate, which is unethical. I believe it's immoral. It's certainly wrong. They are behaving like addicts. This is like a dysfunctional, addictive system. The voters are the enablers. So if I go back there, one of the first things I'm going to do is make a sign that says, this house is corrupt, and stand on the steps of the Congress. And I'm going to continue to do that and bring it to media's attention and point out, for instance, like I'm pointing out tonight, that the Democrats and the Republicans here tonight are not saying we are corrupt. I might not be corrupt, but our party is, and our elected officials back in Washington are. Nobody's saying that.
Mike Hollywell, how would you restore the value of compromise?
Basically by restoring the politics that Bill Filanti represented when he ran against Lynn Woolsey in 1992, but was struck down by brain cancer. But he was a Republican who won six terms in the assembly for Marin County. He was a strong conservationist. He believed in protecting the environment, pesticides, indoor smoking, things like that. He basically was in favor of choice in health care. And most importantly, he had the roots in the minority communities. We have got to stand up for our historical heritage in the black community especially, and their number one issue right now is defense of marriage. They provided 70% margin, which saved Proposition 8. And we have got to defend our political allies if we expect them to defend us. So centrist politics is the way to bridge this partisan gap.
Thank you. Jared Huffman, we are restoring the value of compromise and getting things done. What could you do?
Well, rather than talk about how we'd like other people to be in Congress, I think the most important thing is to lead by example. And I'm the only candidate here who's been challenged in a highly polarized partisan environment, and you haven't seen me be part of that toxic vitriol. You haven't seen me be part of the partisan food fight. I'm true to my Democratic values, and they're strong. You're going to find my record among the strongest anywhere on core Democratic values issues, whether that's a woman's right to choose or protecting our environment or any number of other things. But I do it in a way that doesn't attack the character of others when we disagree. I do it in a way that preserves the ability to work together when we can agree. And that's why when it comes to issues like saving our state parks, I'm able to put together a strongly bipartisan piece of legislation. When it comes to a bill like my clean manufacturing bill, it's strongly bipartisan. So you lead by example. I come from Independence, Missouri, the home of Harry Truman, my political hero. He railed against a do-nothing Congress and found his own solution. I want to take this do-nothing Congress and be part of turning it around, too.
Thank you. No one's arguing that we're not mired in partisan gridlock. So Stacey Lawson, what would you do to fix it?
So I think the key is that we hold our progressive values, those values that are so present here in this district, and we also look to how do we find common ground. And so as someone who often refers to myself as a progressive, pro-small business Democrat, I think it's important that we hold the values of choice and marriage equality and stewarding our environment and getting out of wars we shouldn't be fighting, and that we're deeply committed to restoring our economy, rebuilding a small business landscape, creating those jobs that are going to take care of working families and allow all of us to live the American dream. And I think that's a position from which we can start to rebuild those relationships across the aisle, that we actually need to say, where can we meet? Where can we find common ground? And that's something I'm committed to doing and doing every day in Congress. I also think that we need more women in Congress, that's something in terms of nurturing our families, understanding education, taking care of our communities, fighting for working people, that with 17% women in Congress, that's abysmally low. It's actually shameful. And so keeping strong, qualified women in office to help balance that gender issue and make sure that we're reaching across the aisle to find that common ground is important.
Thank you. John Llewellyn.
Well, I'm an independent, and my theme is unity for fundamental reform. And in Congress, I'll work just like I am in this campaign. I'll be nonviolent. I'll look for lines of unity. I'm trying to solve the problems rather than really being fiercely competitive. I'm trying to solve the problems of militarism that are going to bring us all down, and the tax structure, which has made it so all the people at the top have all the marbles and then everybody else has no marbles. Well, then we've all lost our marbles if we go that way, including the guys at the top. And so, I don't know, maybe I'll be dining alone in the lunchroom, but I'll be talking. I'm not in any caucus or anything. I'll be talking a lot to the Tea Party people. I agree with about half of what Ron Paul is about. He wants to end imperialism and control the Fed, and so do I.
Thank you. Tiffany Redding.
Thank you. I come from a very diverse family, both politically and culturally, and so finding common ground to come from at the dinner table was always very important. It made for a more interesting conversation, and it's a skill that I look forward to bringing to Washington, D.C. That said, I think that one of the more common values that our representatives hold that they're just waiting to discover is that they don't like dialing for dollars week after week, and that they'd rather spend their time working for the people. And by doing that call time on the phone, it separates us and it keeps us from being able to communicate with each other about the real issues at hand. So I'm very interested in bringing that sense of duty and privilege of working for the American people back to Congress and focusing on the business at hand by enacting public financing and getting back to the work of grappling with our common values. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Roberts?
Yeah, I would, I've been calling about 5 years on financial re-regulation, so I have hands-on experience. I think I'm the only one here tonight that has expressed that. From my experience, I would give Congress, both which is the Senate and the House, an F grade, because that to which they're charged the most to do, they do the least. For example, this multi-trillion dollar deficit, debt, etc. One of the things they should do is learn how to prioritize their spending. They don't do that. I think everything's a yes when they could say yes. Now it's different. But they're saying more no's. And secondly, I'm enough of an independent to cross the aisle and look for consensus. So that's one of the things I've done with my 20 years of nonprofit and experience. And also, it's an institutional problem with the Pelosi regime cramming down various measures, not looking for any votes from the other side of the aisle. That is absolutely wrong.
Norman Solomon, how would you restore the art of compromise?
Well, one aspect is to really come to terms with the difference between compromise and capitulation. Legislation requires a lot of compromise. That's often essential. But there are some core issues that we need to define from the outset as absolutely something we're not going to cave in on, we're not going to capitulate on. Human rights, for instance. What a tragedy that Prop 8 was passed. We needed every vote in 2008. We need to stand up and fight for human rights. Now, President Obama, who I was an elected delegate for in 2008 to the National Convention, said, and I think this is a great way to put it, we can disagree without being disagreeable. And that's an ethos that I think we need to be willing and able to engage with in the public square and in Congress. So just to sort of sum up, a lot of things I'll compromise on, but I'm not going to compromise on a woman's right to choose, on habeas corpus, on civil liberties, on perpetual war, or on defending with every penny Social Security and Medicare.
Thank you. And you all know the drill now. We go back to the other side, and Susan Adams.
Thank you. Well, the beauty of being elected to local government is we're not elected based on our partisan politics. We're elected based on getting the job done for our community, and that's why I've been elected 3 times to office. And what I've learned from that experience, and it's been an incredible journey, is that there are no people that don't have a good idea, that you may not agree with them, but you should be listening. 2 ears and 1 mouth goes a long way. And as we are working on building relationships and finding common ground, we come to mutual understanding. And that's how I've been able to solve some of the very difficult challenges that we faced here in Marin County over the last 10 years. You have to be open, transparent, and public. And, you know, Jared mentioned, you know, his successes, but I think and I understand why he felt the need to vote for a budget that closed the state parks in the first place, or that put risks on the in-home support service workers, or that launched prisoners back into our communities without adequate funding. There's a lot of pressure for that, but we don't need to do that if we can fight a little bit harder to stand up for those from the beginning.
Andy Catherine.
I've been fixing problems that politicians and corporations have been creating for 35 years, my entire life. I've fought all of the presidents since Jimmy Carter, all of our senators, all our members of the House. I've worked on 3 pieces of legislation. If you look right now what we have, all 41 Republican senators and probably 95% of the Republicans in the House and 80% of the Democrats meet the diagnostic criteria for antisocial personality disorder. They literally are psychopaths. And I've got copies of that diagnostic criteria out at my table. So this is about recognizing that. You don't go in to heal Hitler. Heal Hitler. You have to fight these people. And we've won. I helped save Headwaters Forest up in Humboldt County. I fought this GMO company, Advanced Genetic Sciences, and bankrupted them with a campaign. We worked on every level you can imagine, lawsuits, writing legislation, petitions, the whole bit. I do what it takes to win, to make the change, because there's no compromise on stopping Greenland from melting. We can't afford to let Greenland continue to melt. 50% of it is sitting on water. When it goes, everything is over, so we got to work now.
Okay, we have one last chance to restore the value of compromise. Brooke Clark?
It's really simple, and you're the people that can do it. That's to put me in office. I'm an independent. In Europe, they don't have a two-party system. There's a multi-party system. And the easiest thing is just elect me, because I'm not going to side on a party line, because I don't have a party. I'm going to side on what makes sense. It's really simple. Continuing from my last question, I was talking about tough on crime, three strikes you're out, war on drugs, you know, all these laws that are putting people in prisons. And if you wiki for a list of countries by incarceration rate, guess whose country's on the top? We are. That's not a place we want to be. We have over 700 people per 100,000 in prisons. That's twice Denmark and like 20 times other Scandinavian countries. It's a catastrophe. And this is because of laws that were passed back in 1990. So if we're trying to look forward without knowing our history, we're doomed. And in the case of this party politics thing, you know, that's why my first lecture was about.
Thank you. So we have one question left, and then we will have closing statements from each of the candidates. And I'm not sure if it's because of my age or because I'm the president, but the students were indulgent enough to allow me to ask the last question. So I take full responsibility for the good or ill of this question. It seemed important to also think specifically about the district, particularly because it's newly redrawn. So the question is, in the newly redrawn 2nd Congressional District, there are clear differences in constituent interests, economic drivers, geography, policy priorities. How will you balance constituent interests with your own judgment, and how will you effectively represent the diverse constituencies of the entire newly redrawn 2nd District? And we will begin with Larry Fritzland.
I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and what I do is work with families that are dysfunctional, struggling, or perhaps doing quite well but want to do even better. And I think that one of the things that is going on, and we just talked about the gridlock, is that there is this polarization that is endemic in the system, and the people go back to Washington and just don't get things done. And what we do need to do is we have to choose grown-up adults who can make common sense solutions to the big problems we have, and what we have is not that. So I think the way I would be different is that I understand we have to sit down and work things out. We do. We have to come up with a consensus. We cannot walk away. We have failed if we don't come up with a solution. So I think we should all back in Washington be locked in a room till we come up with solutions to all of the big problems we have. That's what I think, and ultimately that would bring solution and more serenity to 2nd District. Thank you.
Mike Hollywell, how would you represent all of the constituents of the newly redrawn district?
I believe the unifying aspect of this district is the environment. There are redwood forests and Muir Woods in Marin County and all the way up the coast, and this is the basis for a sound economy based on tourism, not the marijuana-based economy you find in Humboldt and Mendocino now. I believe I'm the only member of this panel who does not support legalization of marijuana. Unfortunately, my younger brother committed suicide after having started out with marijuana. I do not support gateway drugs. The penalties have to be small, but there has to be some sort of a barrier there. We need to basically rebuild the economy of this area by restoring, keeping our money here and not sending it to Washington, D.C. Marin County is practically the most affluent county in the whole country. How in the world are we electing all these Democrats who are going to massively stick it to the people here and repeal Proposition 13, and Lord knows what else they're going to do to gouge the hardworking taxpayers around here?
So we're representing all of the constituencies in a newly redrawn district. Jared Huffman?
First, you have to know how to represent a large constituency. I represent about half of the population in this new congressional district right now in the state assembly. I think that gives me a little bit of a head start. Second, though, you're going to have to work very, very hard. This is a huge and diverse district, and there's just no way around it. You're going to have to work very hard. Nobody works harder for their constituents than I do. Next, you're going to have to be a problem solver. You're going to have to know when what looks like a conflict between constituencies can be avoided. Last year, I had the chance to do that on an issue of frost protection, which appeared to pit our wine grape growing industry against our fragile salmon streams. I found a tool that both could agree on that's going to help solve the problem without that conflict, and we passed it into law. And then finally, you got to be honest. You can't say one thing at the southern end of the district and then have a different policy, let's say, on logging in public lands up in Del Norte County. It's going to catch up to you eventually. And I've been working on these issues long enough that in most cases I've got longstanding positions, and I'm not going to have an etch-a-sketch moment anytime soon.
Stacey Lawson, big new district. How do you represent it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it also comes down to having deep personal experience and an understanding of issues that's relevant for the different parts of our district. So we have average median income in Marin County of $80,000, and Trinity County at $17,000, and we see unemployment rates that are relatively as disparate. I actually grew up in a rural logging, fishing, and mill town in Washington State. It looks very much like many of the towns that dot the north coast of our district. So understanding in my bones things like rural issues, rural education, rural health care, a natural resource-based economy, and what that creates in terms of the need to both protect our environment and be sustainable as we look to ways to support an economic, a sustainable economic approach for those rural communities is very key. And then, of course, I've spent much of my career in areas like innovation and small business creation and clean energy that are so important in terms of many of the sustainable and progressive views here in the southern part of the district. So I think that experience base and the deep understanding of our disparate and multiple communities here will be important.
John Llewellyn, how would you represent this district?
Well, I do my best. I'm living in the heart of the district there in Mendocino County. I've been there for about 35 years, harvesting wild seaweed, drying it, and then I bring it down to the Marin, Sonoma to have a market. And I see the whole district now as a single bioregion, the North Coast bioregion. And I think the best way to represent the district is to really work with people from both ends of it to see how we're all part of a single bioregion, and we have a common interests. The entire ocean from the Oregon border to the Golden Gate Bridge is one of the greatest food-producing ecosystems in the world. It has to be defended and kept clean. We have to rebuild our local fisheries. I think that the fisheries policies of the federal government have to be reformed to help these people. We have to restore our watersheds. We have to stop the peripheral canal from stealing our water and restore the Russian and the Eel watersheds as well.
Thank you. Tiffany Renee, big district, diverse district, new district. How do you represent it?
Thank you. I'm very excited to represent this district. Having gotten to know it through this campaign process, there are varied interests, and as someone that spends a lot of time getting to know my community, being out in it, talking with people, I've come to understand that, you know, we all are concerned about our quality of life, and how we achieve a better quality of life depends where you are in this district. You know, in the southern portion of the district, we want to train. We want to be able to remove some fisheries that are impinging on a pristine area along the coast. Northern parts of the district don't necessarily want to have a train, and they also would like to improve their fisheries and protect that food system. We have a lot of shared agriculture, and being able to achieve organic protections, ensure that we have GE-free foods, is something that is a common value that I found throughout this district. And so working hard to protect those quality of life concerns is something that I will be able to do proudly.
Dan Roberts?
Yes, it's been, as some of my other candidates have mentioned, it's been quite a learning experience in that the needs are different, the income levels are different, the resources are different. I've just come back from Eureka Saturday and Sunday in Eureka, so my mind is still trying to digest all these issues, but I would say it's time for an initiative. I'm going to announce an initiative. It'll be on my website shortly. That is, in order to address all these issues that we have, and some of them are in common, as a matter of fact. For example, you have ranching but up north, and you got dairy down here. You have agricultural throughout the area. You have logging, offshore oil, transportation, right-of-ways, fisheries, dams, water diversions to tsunami warning systems, earthquake preparedness, all these issues are common throughout the district. So it's time, recognizing that we're losing a voice in Congress, by the way. Used to have two, right? We had Lynn and we had Mike Thompson up north. So now we have just one. So we need a coastal coalition.
Thank you. Norman Solomon.
Affirming and recognizing the diversity of this district socially and ecologically. At the same time, I think we need to recognize and affirm what our commonalities are. And sometimes the purported differences are more apparent than real. You know, as I've gone up and down the coast, and my wife Cheryl Higgins and I live on Tomales Bay here, go up the coast for hundreds of miles, and it's so stunning how we share the natural wonders and a lot of the social and economic problems. And those problems exist, by the way, within counties, not only between counties. There are a lot of people suffering economically in great distress whose children, whether it's through student loans or schools that are sometimes literally falling apart, we're facing the same problems, and the federal government has to step up to the plate. One last point. Federally qualified health centers are getting more federal funding, but we're going to have to fight like hell to increase the funding so that underserved areas and Medi-Cal patients and others can get the health care that they deserve, whether it's the Coastal Health Alliance near where I live in this county, or the Petaluma Health Center, or in Eureka, the Open Door Clinic.
Thank you. And back to my right, Susan Adams.
Thank you. Well, I have very deep roots in this district and an understanding that I think none of the other candidates have. As a 25-year resident of Marin County, having raised my children here, working on issues related to poverty right here in Marin County, on homelessness and on the challenge with finding affordable housing, those are some of the common areas that they're experiencing in the northern part of the district. Our median incomes are higher, but that doesn't mean that our issues are completely different. We do have some of the same kinds of challenges in addressing resource management, in addressing rural roads. How many of us have driven over the potholes of West Marin? Well, they've got miles and miles of those in the north part of the county, too. I know we've been bumping through some of those roads. Transportation and health care, these are all really important issues, and it's going to be incumbent upon the congressional leader to not dictate what we think are the best policy, but to really work well with community to bring their policies forward and be partners with them.
Andy Caffrey.
Well, the bottom line is the other people can't. I'm the only one here who has lived, worked, and fought for all six counties. In fact, I lived here after the Oakland firestorm for 2 years, just a couple blocks from here on Bell Avenue. But now I live in Garberville, 190 miles north of here. And, you know, it's one thing to be a tourist to go up to Humboldt County and say, oh, I can learn about these issues. But I actually live with people. The median income in Humboldt, Mendocino, Trinity, and Del Norte is about $35,000 a year. It's $85,000 here. So I live in the third world part of this district. And you can't just, you know, cram some books on that. Also, we have a pot economy up there. I'm involved in incorporating where I live into a place called Emerald City so we can create our own regulations to deal with both medical marijuana and post-legalization. Also, being a medical marijuana patient myself, there's no one who's going to fight harder for federal legalization and get the feds the hell out of here. Our economy, a third of it is from pot up in Humboldt County, over $1 billion. This is our future. Also, having lived in cities, I know what you guys are going through too.
Thank you. Brooke Clark, how would you represent this big new district?
Well, this is a huge district, both, you know, in terms of the numbers compared to what the Constitution started out at. A representative in the House was supposed to have 30,000 constituents, and now we have over 500,000. So they've capped it. You know, they don't do that anymore. And the other thing is it's spread out over a huge geographical area. You know, I had to drive hours to get here from Mendocino County. But the thing that shrinks these things, I think, is the internet. And I think it's being underutilized. We need to have broadband. Where I live, I'm the last guy on the road that can get DSL. It'd be nice if I could get fiber. But if there was a way that people and the congressmen can communicate, which the internet can provide, then I think it shrinks this problem. And I think it's pretty straightforward to do. So issues can be put up. We can have blogs. We can do all kinds of things with the internet to improve communications. And also that has an advantage that people can look at what other people are doing, kind of like a mailing list, that, you know, we will learn about each other in the process.
And the last answer to the last question, William Courtney.
During the psychiatry residency, I spent 3 years learning to listen, and that's really important when you're dealing with some people that are experiencing 20% unemployment. Their focus is going to be quite different than those that are able to find jobs. Everyone is having heart attacks, and my area of specialty is if you could produce a drug that would reduce the size of heart attacks by 66%, that would be a blockbuster. It would make Viagra, you know, put it in second place. We have knowledge about a plant that is patented by the federal government. Why are they arresting 800,000 Americans? I disagree that anyone is going to fight harder with the federal government. I am incredibly well informed on cannabinoid science, and I look forward to an opportunity to debate that with them. I look to their patent that they're now leasing to pharmaceutical companies. DEA is rescheduling for pharmaceutical companies. FDA is approving. These are changes that we can take advantage of and benefit from, and that really crosses from one end of the district to another. So listening, living in the middle, being here for 30 years, I'm willing to represent all 700,000.
Thank you. That concludes the question part of our discussion, and we now go to closing remarks. As I mentioned at the beginning, we will reverse the alphabetical order and start on my left. And there are still 60-second restrictions, but within that 60 seconds, it's a bit of a free-for-all. So closing remarks starting with Norman Solomon.
Well, thanks so much to Dominican University, where I taught Ali class, and also League of Women Voters for bringing us here. You know, I campaigned with a great progressive populist here in the North Bay, Jim Hightower, who tells about an old hardware store where he lives in Austin, and the big sign out front says, "We help you do it yourself." And that's my view of the federal government role, not to micromanage like No Child Left Behind and Race to the Top, but not to have the attitude as the Republicans and some corporate Democrats have, "You got a problem in California, it's your problem." No, "We help you do it yourself" should be the mantra. Now, I really take very seriously the example of one of my political heroes, Paul Wellstone, who was elected to the U.S. Senate without ever having held elective office. He came out of social movements. He understood that social movements are part of a partnership, and the founders didn't choose a constitution that would be just a ladder for elected officials to climb or for the rich or the richly funded to go. So we're walking the walk, talking the talk. Please visit us at solomonforcongress.com, and thanks again to everybody for making our evening possible.
Thank you, and we're going to work our way in the opposite direction. I think we can adjust. Dan Roberts.
Yeah, just if I could finish the idea, I ran out of time earlier, about my the new initiative to form a coastal caucus. It deals with the fact that we're losing voice in Congress for this particular district. So the way to maybe regain some of that voice is to combine the representatives from up and down the coast, Washington, Oregon, and Southern California. And I would move this as an initiative, work with them to unify our issues. And it might involve some degree of carve-out of EPA covering this area. That's yet to be defined. But basically, I'm here to serve. I served in the Marine Corps a long time ago. I volunteered, and it's at my time in my life. I've raised three boys, mostly as a single parent, 40 years in the district I've lived. So it's time for me to step up and offer my leadership and experience skills to this very important congressional position, and I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Closing remarks, Tiffany Renee.
Thank you. I am so excited to be in this race as one of three women to hopefully hold on to this woman's seat and continue to build women representation in Congress. As a single mom trying to get myself through school and having two young children, I graduated from Mills College with a degree in women's studies. I went on, as the first in my family to graduate from college, I went on to receive a master's degree in integral ecology at California Institute of Integral Studies. I've spent over 20 years working for my community very deeply and very dedicatedly. I come from a background of people working in public service to their community and to their government, and will continue to have that legacy in DC as a hard worker representing the needs of this new district. And I look forward to your vote. You can find out more information information on me at TiffanyReneeForCongress.com. Thank you.
John Llewellyn.
Yes, I want to encourage you to go to my website, JohnLlewellynForCongress.org, and read about the broad-based reforms that I'm working on. I feel like I'm a part of the greater Occupy movement. Nobody represents the Occupy movement, but we really realize that we have to do some fundamental changes in our economic structure, and I think in our military policy, in the way that we provide health care. We need a single-payer health care system. I think we all have to look at the need to end the prohibition of marijuana. It's just like the prohibition of alcohol was. It's creating a world of corruption and violence and destruction, and these are things that we're doing against ourselves. I won't accomplish anything that I want to unless I get a lot of support and help, and I'm part of an organization of people who are really working for these changes.
Stacey Lawson.
Thank you again to Dominican and to the League of Women Voters. I'm Stacey Lawson, and I'm running to serve you as your next Congresswoman. I promise you that every day in Congress, I'll be fighting for our working and middle class families, fighting to restore our economy, fighting to make more in America, fighting to create the kinds of high-wage middle-class jobs that we need to put our kids through college and buy homes and ensure everyone has a secure retirement. And I know how important this is because my family was a family that needed those things. I grew up in a trailer in the woods. My grandpa was a mill worker. My dad was a truck driver. And we started out with very modest means. And it was through the social contract of America and the opportunities that we have in this country that we were able to work our way into the middle class. That's why I'm fighting for more middle-class jobs. That's why I created the Center for Entrepreneurship and Technology at UC Berkeley to train our bright young people how to be entrepreneurs and create small businesses. And that's why we put together our plan, Making More in America, which I hope you will all read through. And I think that's also why many of the folks are endorsing us, Emily's List, Women's Campaign Fund, and others, and that we're now polling top two in the race. I look forward to your vote, and thank you so much for being here tonight.
Jared Huffman.
Thank you to Dominican, to the League, to my fellow candidates, and to all of you for being part of a great discussion. I want to leave you with two things that I hope you've taken away tonight. The first, I have strong democratic values that I think are a good match for this district. These are not recent values forged on the campaign trail. They go back two decades. As a young attorney representing women and women's right or women's organizations in Title IX litigation, as an environmental attorney working for NRDC to restore our rivers and salmon, 12 years in local government here in Marin County, and for the past 6 years as a legislator where I've got 100% career voting record with Planned Parenthood and other women's organizations. Second thing, I couple those values with a record of getting things done. You deserve more than just values. You certainly deserve the values. You deserve results. And I want to keep doing the kind of work that I've done for you the past 6 years. I have loved being your representative in the Assembly. I hope you will entrust me with that job at the federal level. And I hope you go to my website and see the many organizations and individuals that have endorsed me, including the California Small Business Association, just today. Thank you.
Mike Hollowell.
Well, I am here to speak in support of Republican values, the Republican values that started with Abraham Lincoln and continue today with a strong commitment to maintaining our toehold within the minority communities. And we should be the party of emancipation, and we should be reaching out to minority communities and try to support small business, not this caricature that Obama, President Obama, pardon me, tries to paint the Republican Party as the party of the top 1%. We couldn't vote our way out of a paper bag with only 1%. We're the party of small business. A small business, however, if you're going to hire a number of people, needs to have some accumulated capital. And we cannot let something like the Buffett rule double the rate of capital gains and expect that it's not going to adversely affect job possibilities. We need to maintain our rank and file accountability on issues. If you happen to be a Republican, think about what your issues are and how it should be reflected in Washington.
Larry Fritzlin.
Thank you. This democracy that we have is very precious. Millions of people have given their lives to preserve this. And yet there's a very sad joke that goes around. How do you tell if a politician is lying? You know how to finish this. Their lips are moving. I believe the root cause is the taking of money from people that we legislate or regulate. This is unethical. And if your candidate, Republican or Democrat, if your candidate is not pointing this out, is not pointing out how the other Democrats and Republicans are taking money and selling their influence, do not vote for them. Do not vote for them. I stand for not taking money and going back there and pointing out the corruption. I don't have a big budget. I don't. The only way this is going to work if you guys tell people, 10 people tell 10 people. I have a website. And to the media, this is a big deal. This needs to be the number one thing you're writing about. Thank you.
William Courtney.
When 76 progressive Democrats vote against the right to assemble, to speak, to seek redress, it's time for a new Democrat. And you'll be able to follow me going forward at civillibertiescaucus.org. Ron Paul was the only one who, or there were three actually, but Ron Paul stands out as someone who voted against the protest bill. I had the honor to meet him a couple weeks ago. Some of his policies are very exciting. Some of them I don't understand. Mine will be very clear. I think we have a right to health. I think we have a right to freedom of speech. And I think civil liberties, if they're not protected, will be lost. And civil liberties do not bounce back. They do not swing back. They do not come back. We had no weapons of mass destruction. We attacked Iraq. What exactly happened at 9/11? It's a very difficult question to ask, but if we don't ask what happened there, we're going to miss why we're strip searching 13 million Americans, why you can't speak, why there's constitutional free zones within 100 miles of the coast, and I will pit my entire life against stopping that progress.
Brooke Clark.
My mother was a Stanford grad that went there on a scholarship. My father was a full-time artist. I think Heath Ceramics is around here someplace. He worked for them for a while. And I'm lucky. I think I got a little of each one. I got some brains and I got some creativity. So I don't think outside the box. There is no box. So I'm coming up with all kinds of ideas that you can see on my webpage. And two with the digit partygovernment.com. I just touched on one, capitalism 2.0. And there's things, you know, the economic system in terms of, I mean, the monetary system. We use fractional reserve banking, and that's not sustainable. I think sustainability is one of the key overriding things we need to really be looking at. Not just climate change, but it has implications for all kinds of things, and we have to look at it in a broad way. On my webpage, there's a link to a video called There's No Tomorrow, and it's based on a series of 8 videos called The Most Important Video You'll Ever See.
Andy Caffrey.
You know, if you're sitting on the beach and a tsunami's coming and you ignore the early warning systems and you wait until you see the wave, if you start running and you don't start early enough and get far enough away, you're just as dead as if you sat on the beach. That's the deal with the climate crisis. If we don't reduce our fossil fuels enough to prevent Greenland from continuing to melt and West Antarctica too, we're looking at what happened 120,000 years ago when we had the madhouse century. 20 feet sea level increase, 70 feet drop in 100 years. We have to ask, what are we trying to do here? When I was a boy, I saw the greatest betrayal of my life. I saw the so-called greatest generation give fucking Richard Nixon and LBJ the power to take our boys and send them off to die. 55,000 boys. Their parents just let them go because they didn't do their homework and find out what was really going on with our foreign policy and our history. The same thing is happening right now regarding the climate. So I'm asking you, do you know enough? Can you answer the question, how much time do we have to reduce our fossil fuels and how much they have to be reduced? I can answer that. These other people can't. They just think climate change is something that's bad and we got to stop. But I'm here to actually do the math and make sure we don't cross those thresholds.
Susan Adams, you started us off and you're going to finish us up, I think, this evening.
I like having the last word. I really have enjoyed this incredible journey that we've all been on together, and I appreciate being on home turf here tonight. My travels have reinstilled in me the faith in the American people. There are some incredible people working up and down this beautiful district. I'd argue the most beautiful district in the whole country, that are working on some incredible programs and projects. And your elected official needs to be the one to help facilitate the people that are living in those communities. I'm a healer. I've been working on Medicare for All, and I'm a nurse, and nurses have an 85% approval rating, which is great for me, unlike state and federal government. You all know me in this room. You've watched me in action in elected office. I'm endorsed by the local women's political caucuses in Marin and Sonoma. I'm endorsed by the Sierra Club and the SEIU. I've balanced budgets. I am a very careful steward of the taxpayer money, and I have that kind of reputation. So visit my website, SusanAdamsForCongress.com, and learn more about me. Thank you.
I am so impressed at how well the candidate stayed with. You can say a lot in 60 seconds, it turns out. And I also very appreciative of the audience for playing along and not getting too involved in cheering and so on. And I think you need a chance to do that. So I'm going to reintroduce the candidates and give you a chance to let it all out a little bit because you've been so well contained. And I also want you to have a chance to thank all of the candidates for coming this evening. So please join me in thanking each of our candidates individually. Susan Adams. Andy Caffrey. Brooke Clark.
Have fun.
William Courtney. Larry Fritzlin. Mike Hollywell. Jared Huffman. Stacy Lawson. John Llewellyn. Tiffany Renee. Dan Roberts. And Norman Solomon. Thank you to the League of Women Voters. A particular thank you to the students in our political science classes and to Margie Eller, the president of the Marin League of Women Voters, who was our timekeeper this evening. Thank you all. Yes. Vote on June 5th. Good night.
Thank you.